This is Brian Cambria with news for the KVNF listening area, Thursday, March 7th, 2013. The Ditch and Reservoir Company Alliance meets today and tomorrow in Grand Junction to discuss a variety of water issues, including a West Slope water bank, practical uses of GIS on ditch systems, and agricultural and environmental partnerships. KVNF's Marty Durlin talked to Stucker Mesa resident Philip Siriani about the water situation in the North Fork Valley.
Philip Siriani is the president of the Overland Ditch Company, which provides water for about 5,000 acres of agricultural land in Delta County. On the eve of a conference of ditch companies in Grand Junction this week, Siriani talked about big issues in the water world.
In my position as the Overland president, and my communication with people that manage the Colorado River, you know, we're seeing increased worries about supply and projects for Western Colorado agriculture. I think that's a big worry. There's a lot of interest in efficiency projects. Farmers are enjoying a lot of access to federal government funds for improving efficiencies. And as you drive around the valley, you see a lot of center pivots and you see a lot of new types of irrigation strategies. That's something new in the valley. Historically, our farmers irrigated out of open ditches, and we're not concerned about the amount or necessarily quality of water, but those are big issues right now.
When you say quality, what are you referring to?
Well, it's become apparent that the mere act of irrigating lands in Delta County, and probably more prevalent in the Montrose County area, is that as water makes its way from spring sources and passes through farmland, it picks up nutrients, and it picks up, more importantly, salt and selenium. The results of water quality testing in the lower river basin, and what I mean by that is states and counties below Delta, have shown increasing rises in salt and selenium concentrations. There's been a lot of biologic work done showing that there's enhanced danger to fish species in the Colorado River Basin. The salt content of the water as it makes its way through Lake Powell and on its way to California is high and causing damages. So what you're seeing currently, and you're seeing a lot of this in the North Fork Valley right now, you're seeing a huge multi-million dollar projects that are being sponsored by the Bureau of Reclamation primarily to put water in pipes to decrease its ability to pick up these minerals and nutrients and deposit them downriver. And that's primarily been driven by the Bureau of Reclamation and efforts by the federal government to make amends. Because the fact remains that the upper basin is really, in a strange sense, responsible for water quality in the lower basin. So the federal regulators have figured out that it's much better to control these water quality issues in our valleys and where the source water is for the Colorado River. The founding fathers that put our state together in the last part of the last century were very clever when they wrote the water statutes. And they recognized early on that the water was going to be scarce and that the methodologies for distribution had to be based on utilization and efficient use. Our piece of the puzzle in state water really is governed by the water laws. And these water laws basically say that you have first in time, first in right. Well, there are some water decrees in the North Fork Valley, the Terror Creeks, and others that are in the 1880s. So in a water law that is based on scarcity, the older decrees get the water first. The issues for the North Fork are that we live in this beautiful place, and we look at this snowpack, and somehow we are under the impression that this water belongs to us. In the state of Colorado, the water belongs to the people of the state. The fact that you have a water right or a decree does not give you ownership of that water. all your decree gives you is your right to use that water efficiently in the time and in the line in which your decree is offered. And you have responsibilities, and if you don't do that, then you lose it.
The Ditch and Reservoir Company Alliance, or DARCA, meets today and tomorrow at the Two Rivers Convention Center in Grand Junction. For information, see darca.org or call 971-412-1960. For KVNF News, I'm Marty Derlin.
The Denver Post reports that the Fort Collins City Council on Tuesday night banned fracking within city limits, defying the governor and other state authorities who say local governments have no right to regulate the oil and gas industry. The ban was expected to bring lawsuits from the state and from the Colorado Oil and Gas Association. Dozens of Fort Collins residents urged council members to protect them from oil and gas activity that they see as a threat to air and water, and pledged that we've got your back against state authorities if you fight for us. Several other cities and counties have drafted or declared moratoriums on drilling while they try to craft local rules to address operations that increasingly are conducted close to communities and may threaten residents' health. Colorado Attorney General John Suthers sued Longmont last year after leaders there imposed regulations on in-town oil and gas exploration. Then when Longmont voters responded by passing a ban, the state joined in a second lawsuit filed against the city by the industry. Governor John Hickenlooper's spokesman Eric Brown said, quote, "The governor takes no joy in suing local government. He also has an obligation to uphold the law." State lawmakers granted the Colorado Oil and Gas Conservation Commission, not cities or counties, exclusive authority over industry operations. While state officials won't challenge local rules for industry transport, fires, or emergencies, they say locals cannot set rules to protect water and wildlife, establish bigger buffers around wells, address visual impacts, or limit industrial noise and light. There are more than 50,000 wells in the state, a number increasing by about 2,500 a year. In Fort Collins, Prospect Energy runs the only wells within city limits, which are expected to continue under a deal with the city. The Colorado Supreme Court will hear oral arguments this morning in a prolonged lawsuit aimed at trying to fix how the state funds education. The state is appealing a trial court decision that said funding for K-12 schools is inadequate and unconstitutional. Benta Berkland has more from the state capitol.
In the case, Lobato versus Colorado, parents in several school districts sued the state for failing to offer a uniform and thorough education system. They argue schools don't have the resources to pay for the education system the state created over time, including updated technology, infrastructure, and programs to help lower the achievement gap and improve literacy. Democratic Senator Andy Kerr of Lakewood says something needs to change.
There does seem to be pretty strong agreement from many different groups that we need to do something about how we fund our schools here in Colorado. We have dug a deep hole. Our kids are competing against kids not just in other states, but in other countries.
During the recent economic downturn, Colorado lawmakers cut nearly $1 billion from public schools to help fund the budget shortfall. Lawmakers in both parties say they regretted doing it, but had no other choice. The state is appealing the Lobato decision and arguing that the court shouldn't weigh into the education policy debate because it's up to the legislature to decide how it funds schools. I'm Benta Berkland at the state capitol.
A free event on Saturday at the Paradise Theater will offer a glimpse of the North Fork Valley through the eyes of seven young reporters, ages 8 through 12, as they interview business owners, coal executives, farmers, artists, and ranchers about the future of the North Fork Valley in a series of film documentaries. KVNF's Marty Derlin has more.
Allie Lightfoot is the program director of KVNF and a filmmaker. Over the past year, she directed an innovative program using local kids as reporters and documentarians.
Pass the Mic is a youth storytelling and news corps that was developed at KVNF. And it started off when we had a few workshops with kids. I immediately realized that not only should we expose kids to all the technical aspects, they have a natural talent in those areas. Generally, they pick up editing faster than you could possibly imagine. I mean, you show them once and they can do it. But they also bring the community together. They can take people that may have different viewpoints. Their subjects will put their best foot forward in an interview. And they get people thinking about the future, which I think we all need to do from time to time.
So you have kids from 8 to 12 in this project. Why did you choose that age group?
For two reasons. One reason is they're at an age where they can come up with their own questions. They're sort of becoming their own people at that point with opinions and ideas that don't entirely mirror those of their parents. But then the other reason why I like working with kids that age is because they do still have their parents helping them out, helping them make appointments on time, finish their assignments, that kind of thing.
I know this is funded by Heart and Soul. Can you tell me how these two go together, Heart and Soul and Pass the Mic?
They are a match made in heaven, actually. They go together really well. The goal of Heart and Soul was to really get to the heart and soul of this valley and find out what matters most to people. So the kids were asking questions like, what do you love about living here? What would you change if you could? What was it like in the past when they're interviewing someone who's been here a long time? And these are questions that kids are naturally curious about. So they enjoyed asking these questions and finding out the answers.
Were there any surprises as you went through this project?
I think the kids surprised me every day that we were working, because kids will be running around, don't seem focused at all sometimes. And then when they would actually sit down to do the interviews, they seemed completely prepared. And they would have these great questions. They can multitask really well, I felt. They could be working on an interview while also wrestling out in the hallway. So that surprised me. It surprised me how many people they were able to reach out to in a 10-week period. We had over 40 interviews conducted. They were amazing.
Now, when we go to this event, what will happen?
Well, first you'll see a short film about the project, kind of explaining what the kids actually did in those 10 weeks. And then you'll see a section on each industry. So every reporter will have several reports. And so you're basically seeing a bunch of documentaries about the North Fork. And again, you can come see these films Saturday. That's this Saturday, March 9th at 3 p.m. at the Paradise Cedar in Paonia.
The Pass the Mic event is free, and the first 50 people get free popcorn. A film featuring four high school graduates talking about growing up in the North Fork will also be shown. Thus concludes today's newscast. This is Brian Cambria for KVNF News.